You're listening to The Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Gonna be missed. That is Teddy Pendergrass. Wake up, everybody. And you know, also before we get to our guest today on the Carol Cox Show, tonight's the Grammy Awards, and hopefully, besides doing a tribute to Michael Jackson, hopefully they'll do a tribute to Teddy.
Yeah, Teddy passed.
Yes, he was a great guy. Young too, 59 years old, passing away. And today on the Carol Cox Show, we have mayoral candidate Donovan De La Cruz with us in the studio. Right now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Francis. And good morning, Donovan.
Good morning.
Mr.
Aloha.
De La Cruz, how are you?
I'm doing good. And you?
Good, good. I'm glad you accepted my invitation. We are always talking about politics and the politicians and the effects of it. And I thought I'd try and seize this opportunity to ask you to come in and be able to be available to the listeners out there without any scripted anything. I mean, so this is a chance where they get to call you up and out of the blind and ask you questions, so they don't have to take your promises, you know, in a sound bite.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm glad you accepted the offer and the invitation.
No, thank you. And, you know, I really want to thank you for always being the public's watchdog. I mean, there isn't anything that goes on that you don't know about. And I think we all owe you a debt of gratitude that you know, someone is always watching. Someone is making sure that elected officials and government officials are held accountable to the highest standard, because we all serve the public and we want to make sure that everything's going to be accountable and transparent, and that money's going to be used wisely, and that no one is ever going to be treated unfairly. And mm-hmm. I think you always ensure that.
Yeah, so. Justice, and it's not a perfect world, and some probably say we're nitpicky, but just forever try to strike a balance. Even nature's never, there's never an equilibrium. It's never stable, but, you know, with humans, we have to forever be so vigilant, because we can be easily influenced.
And one thing I got to admit, though, is you definitely do your homework.
Yeah.
I mean, you definitely, you know, do as much research as you can before you come up with a position. And, you know, you're very diligent about doing that. So, yeah. Thank you.
It's about truth and sharing with the public, you know. And but anyway, so much about me. What I really, I've dealt with the council quite often. And when dealing with you, it's rather pleasant.
And
I think that, and I'm not advocating for you. I don't want anybody to go away and say that I said you should vote for him. But I can say this: all of my dealings with you have been pleasant, and I have no problem with seeing you in a higher office or seeing you as a city councilman, because you've always done what it is to do for the public, as far as I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Solid ways. Whether it's traffic, whatever issues are, you know, so, and not, you can't respond to everything, because if you could, then I think something was wrong. You know? But tell us, tell the listeners out there, and before we do that, 524-1080. I don't want to hear anybody tell me, I should have called, I should have called, I started to call, you can ask him straight, unscripted, there's no agendas here, so. Have at it. 524-1080, The Carol Cox Show. So tell us something about you.
Well, you know, I first ran for the city council in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I was 4 years on the Wahiawa Neighborhood Board. I was 2 years as chair. And then at that point, there was the reapportionment. And the seat was open because of term limits.
Mm-hmm.
And so my district actually begins in Mililani Mauka. It cuts through all the way to Kaena Point. And it comes all the way around to the northern edge of Kaneohe. So I have about 40% of the landmass of Oahu, but 1/9 the population. So I'm really lucky. I would say one of the most beautiful districts on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's so warm and hospitable. When I first campaigned, you know, it was fun. It was a pleasure, because I got to meet so many people who really, really care about the environment and their community. You know, I got to say, though, when I first got on the city council, it kind of reminded me of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've seen that,
mm-hmm.
that movie. And what I enjoy most is learning about new things on how we can help serve the public.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that happened in my 8 years so far that we've seen major changes. Leasehold conversion, repealing leasehold conversion, the beginning of recycling, of real
mm-hmm.
curbside recycling. Unfortunately, we're still, I would say, not completely finished. I mean, we're still almost at the end of the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So we can really get into island-wide curbside recycling. You know, there was the bus strike
mm-hmm.
that during my first year and several reorganizations and several reorganizations attempts. But, you know, I did see a lot of progress move forward in many different issues, and I was glad to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got a caller now. Sandra, are you there? Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Got a question for her?
Yes, I did. Good morning, Donovan Dela Cruz.
Good morning. Aloha.
Aloha. I was just wondering, this past week, there was bill number 07-10, that no tents erected in the city park
mm-hmm.
During the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
You know, that's a good question. It just came up this week.
Yes.
The mayor just introduced that. Two bills that he introduced.
Two bills, yes.
Yeah. So that's actually, I think, going to come to my committee. And we're going to hear both sides. The ACLU did object to the bill.
Uh-huh.
You know, there is no doubt we have to deal with the problem that the mayor presented. I think we all have to admit to that. But I think it's important that we hear both sides before we make a final decision.
Admitting to that would be the homeless population in the city parks.
Yeah, you know, and we would want to hear from the police department as well, because you want to make sure that whatever we pass is going to be enforceable.
Yeah, but I don't know if you actually realize how it's going to affect the general public, because we as fishermen use the city parks as well as the state parks, yeah? And we cannot erect even an umbrella or a tent to be out of the elements, you know, the sun, the harsh wind and rain, and, you know, I don't really believe that that's the solution, because as it is now, we can't go and use the city parks during the night because the parks are closed. And there's no parking signs on, most of the time, both sides of the city park. So if we were to find a parking space and be able to park our car and cross the city park at night to fish, we could get a citation.
Okay.
If a police officer were to see us.
Okay, so you're asking...
Well, let me just clear up a few things. Not all city parks are closed at night. There's a process for that to occur. The neighborhood board initiates that process.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it depends on the park. So.
Yeah, but most of the city parks that the fishermen use is closed because it's close. You know, it's there's the ocean.
Yeah, no, and I hear your concern regarding the balance.
Yes.
That you want to make sure that that... the hobbyist, the fisherman, even just the average person can
just
still...
the average tourist.
Even the average citizen. I mean,
yes.
The resident. They're still going to be able to use and enjoy the public services without feeling that they're going to be reprimanded or have get a ticket later on. So as the discussion occurs, we're going to hear from both sides.
How do you feel about it, though, Donovan?
Well, I have my concerns, just like what you mentioned. There were a few people that brought up that just the average person, and they're going to have a permit, and what is that going to take? How much is that going to cost just to put up the umbrella? Right.
You want to hear the all sides first?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, this past week was the first time it came up.
Yeah.
And so the first reading is, all bills get accepted to the council.
Uh-huh.
Then it comes to committee. Then we're going to go second reading, public hearing, back to committee, and then third and final reading, if it should even get that far.
Uh-huh.
But like I said, I think for most of us, you know, council members didn't comment about it at all just because it was first reading.
Yeah.
But it has to be fair, it has to be balanced, it has to make sense, and I think we have to hear from the police department, is it going to be enforceable?
Mm-hmm.
But, okay. You know, we look forward to hearing more from the public as we get to committee.
Okay, well, Sandra, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Aloha. Anyway, one of the issues were talking...
You know, she brought up an excellent point about... and a lot of people do utilize the city parks.
Mm-hmm.
And for very different reasons. As she mentioned, some people may use them to either pass through, to go to fishing... Mm-hmm. Other people use them for recreation, you know, and other people just use them just to relax.
Right.
And I think our city parks are one of the most important services that our city provides.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're always going to want to make sure that they're clean,
right,
that they're safe, and that they're going to be enjoyable. And, you know, that's where the balance comes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
We do hear from a lot from the public about dealing with our homeless issues.
Right.
But we have to find that balance.
You know, the collateral damage or these, sometimes they can be extreme measures. For me, for example, when you go to a park, they shut it down for whatever reason. And it seems to be, sometimes when you see it, it's appear to be extreme measures, because if you, for example, people shoplifting at the Ala Moana Center, mall, at the mall, do you just abolish any pedestrian traffic in the stores? And you know, so what? How extreme? So what we do is, if there's homelessness out there, in my opinion, they should address that and not shut down the facility completely. And then, because then we're all made to suffer, you know. So hopefully, as we go along in this, I think the original process of what has been occurring lately is just really extreme. You know, you move them out and they pop up KL Beach, or they, you know, you push them off Waikiki. And then all citizens suffer, because then you say, well, that's it. You know, we're going to shut it down completely. And I think that's not the purpose of good management.
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I have the largest district, and I think of all council members, my district and probably Tarapo, we have the most beaches.
Right.
And so we'll probably see, like as you mentioned, when you close one thing or you try to push people out, you're basically moving the problem from one area to the next,
right,
versus just really dealing with the situation. And so we have to be sensible. We have to provide real solutions, and sometimes that's going to take some resources.
Mm-hmm. You know, changing tracks here, you served as the chairman for how many years in the city council? And can you just share with us, what is it like being a chairman of the Honolulu City Council? What does it involve? It obviously costs you a lot of time.
Yeah, you know, it's very administrative.
Mm-hmm.
You do spend a lot. I really spent a lot of time doing it because I didn't want to neglect my district as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to make sure that was always my first priority, was the council district too and the people I represented. But when you're the council chairman, you're also the council member's council member.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that the legislative body is functioning in the smoothest way possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that I really put a lot of effort into making sure that the council didn't fight about silly and, I would say, manini things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my first year that I became council chair, we made quite a bit of reforms. I mean, there were a lot more documents online.
Mm-hmm.
You could even go and get public access.
Mm-hmm.
You could watch council meetings online. Expense reports, they were all put in line. Prior to me being chair, sick leave and council members spending any type of money for administrative costs would have to go through the council chair.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like you were a parent. You know, and I was uncomfortable with that, just because you could play a lot of games with that. You can see how some council chairs in the past would trade, okay, if you help me with this, I'll help you with that, and, you know, I'll give your staff, I'll approve their vacation or their sick leave or approve your expenses. But what we did was we divided the amount allocated for administrative expenses evenly amongst the nine members,
mm-hmm.
and then we put them online so that everyone was held accountable by their constituents. That way, if I don't necessarily agree with how one council member may have spent their money, it's transparent, it's open, and their constituents will judge them.
Mm-hmm.
So we put a lot more of that kind of philosophy in place regarding everyone being fair, everyone being equal, but at the same time, their expenses have to be online.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to share a little story with the public out there about you that I experienced regarding documents and accessing things on the line. When you first started this, I recall you saw me in the hallways there at the City Hall, and you were just gleaming with, you were all happy, excited. You're going, we have this
DocuShare.
DocuShare, and you passed the paper out, and you had this big smile, and I'm thinking, this is the first time ever a politician has ever come to me and said, we want you to know what we're doing, and it's online. I'm thinking, you know, maybe what's going on here? But, you know, and you've done quite good about that, because it costs money to get, if I want one single document, a page, I'd have to get in the car, drive downtown, put parking, go upstairs, find it, and pay for it.
Yeah.
then get in the car and drive back.
Yeah.
How many people seeking documents that they could have gotten online? So that's, I'm not saying that you can claim the complete success of that, but I can share with the public, you're the first politician I've ever known to be excited about letting the public know and having access to what they're doing. So, thank you.
No, and that's one way we can reduce government expenses as well, right? I mean, the more you can put them online, then that when you go to City Hall, that means you're going to, but you know, one of the clerks is going to spend time on that versus focusing on other things, or maybe we might have to hire less people now because of the fact that people can access more things online.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, we talked earlier about the issue of spay-neuter cats and dogs and what have you. Can you share, do you have any ideas
about
that?
My,
what would you like to
I have my philosophy on it. Mm-hmm. You know, just being around City Hall, you see a lot of feral cats.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see more resources put into trying to deal with the feral cat problem in regards to how we can ensure that they're going to be spayed and neutered.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can kind of control the feral cat population.
Mm-hmm.
You see them at harbors. You see them now even at some parks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know the answer, but I do know that that's the direction I think we need to move in. I'm not sure what the costs are,
mm-hmm.
But I do think it's a public safety issue.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the strategies financially wise? Would you rethink the spay-neuter program that we have or that the city is funding? Or
you know, that's where we're going to have to talk to the I guess, veterinarians,
mm-hmm.
the Humane Society, but I hear where you're coming, mm-hmm. where you're leading it, and the resources then for that program where people are bringing in their animal to get
mm-hmm.
spayed and neutered, you know, and there's motivation there already, right?
Right.
And if you're taking care of your cat or your pet, then you're probably, I mean, that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a lot of people, that's like their child, right?
Right.
And so
right.
they're going to want to provide the best service possible and take care of that. But on the flip side, there's this unfortunate situation where we have lots of feral cats, and
mm-hmm.
so maybe what we have to do in the future then is to use those resources instead of maybe subsidizing
mm-hmm.
that where people bring in their pets to get spayed and neutered, is to really focus their resources on the feral cat population.
Mm-hmm. So it's always there's no real answer. I mean, because you got so many parties contributing, and you got so many parties with part of the solution, and they just need to get together.
Yeah, you know, it has to be partnership, and
right.
the reason why is because there's not that many resources. I mean, you know, we hear every day, let's keep taxes low.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep taxes low. And I mean, especially in these economic times, you want to keep taxes as low as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have to deal with these issues in regards to health and safety.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you don't want to cross the line where the feral cat population, and we've seen it increase. It's because
mm-hmm.
the problem is becoming worse
mm-hmm.
throughout time. And so where is that tipping point then that we say, okay, we got to put more resources into this before it gets even worse?
Mm-hmm. So you'd look at some of the new rules or that the existing rules. For example, if I went to the Humane Society now and wanted to spay neuter, I can't take it in before 10. You know, to control some of the feral 10 at night, and then I can't pick them up. They just changed the rules, so it's so difficult. So if you probably would give some thought to that.
Yeah, and you see some people now who, and I got to give you a lot of credit, because most people would not go out there and try to, I guess, capture a feral cat and bring them in to go get them spayed and neutered, even though that's very, very responsible to deal with the issue that I just mentioned. But you do see a lot of people out there who are feeding the cats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I would hope that they care enough as well that they're going to want to bring that cat in. And if we can expand the hours, expand the service, make it expedited, as you mentioned, then we might be able to motivate more people to bring in feral cats to deal with the problem.
But that population there at the City Hall and the State Camp, they've actually
diminished.
But they've really been managed quite well through the trap neuter release. And that I know that works, you know.
Yeah.
But to just stand back and do nothing. But anyway, other issues, and some would say bigger issues, and I don't know how you quantify issues, but what do you have on your radar for traffic and for the rail? Now, I didn't want to get I'd do the rail later because, you know, we probably would get stuck there, you know, listeners calling in. But go ahead. Can you share with us what some of the ideas you have about the rail, and what would you do and how would you handle it?
Well, right now, my office already, I've been going to every neighborhood and board in my district and different community associations in my district, and really talking about transit-oriented development. Mm-hmm. And that's a development that will and should occur around a 2,000-foot radius of the station. And my philosophy of rail is that it's really a land use issue, and that if we're going to direct the population growth in the urban core so that we can keep the country, mm-hmm. then we're going to... Rail is a tool to ensure that we're going to have that kind of proper urban development. Mm-hmm. You know, some people say that build it and it will come. You know, mm-hmm. we're going to have good transit-oriented development. I don't think that's true, because you can see from other places across the nation where they have rail, it took some time for people to realize, I think we got to make better use of the land. We mm-hmm. should create more density. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with that, you have a lot more opportunity when you create the density that you can in regards to affordable housing, senior housing, more small businesses. You know, as I mentioned before, if you were to walk from Kapolei to Ivile, Ala Moana to Ivile, it's not a very pleasant walk.
Right.
You know, that's right in the middle of our city, mm-hmm. Ala Moana to Ivile.
Right.
And any other city, if you were to walk that distance, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Seattle, San Diego, it's a very pleasant walk. You don't even realize it's that far because it's very stimulating. You see shops, you see housing, you see government services, there's restaurants, lots of interaction. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of environment that we need to create around the rail stations, mm-hmm. where people can walk, they can live, they can do business. Because as people, you know, every study showed that traffic may not get better, mm-hmm. but how do we then improve people's quality of life? How do we provide good public transportation as an option? And that's going to be creating the density around the stations, the 14 stations that we can develop.
Right, but now, are we talking about this rail that is being proposed, or would you modify it? Are we supporting the existing plans that is being proposed and we've spent some hundreds of millions of dollars on, or what, you know?
You know, the answer to that question really is that each station needs to be planned appropriately and well thought out. Mm-hmm. And that's how we're going to know if that station needs to be elevated or at grade. But from my experience to date, mm-hmm. every city that I've been to, when the station is grade separated, either underground or elevated, mm-hmm. you have better integration of the mixed use around it.
Right.
You know, even when I went to Portland, when it was at grade, it was more like a bus stop. Mm-hmm. But when it was grade separated, you could see, you know, especially in Montreal and Singapore and other places, you see that when it's grade separated, you can walk out of the station into a shopping mall. You can walk out of the station into retail, mm-hmm. Doctor's offices, apartment buildings, convention centers. But when it's at grade, it's a bus stop. Mm-hmm. I have not seen a successful that kind of integration. And if we're talking about focusing density in the urban core, mm-hmm. then you're going to need that integration.
I see. Yeah, but not all elevated and would leave us...
At grade, unless you can really prove that it's going to be a well-integrated system...
Elevated, you mean?
Yeah, then you're going to really need a grade-separated system.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a caller on the line. Pam, good morning. How are you?
Yes, hi. I just have a couple of... comments regarding the spay-neuter mm-hmm. program and the Hawaiian Humane Society. I agree with your statements regarding that the spay-neuter has been very restricted, very limited, and more so now in its hours, and the rules have made it very difficult for people to take advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Donovan, you mentioned that you need to discuss this, and there needs to be partnering with the Hawaiian Humane Society and others. I would just like to say that the Hawaiian Humane Society, I think their reputation has been damaged very severely by the Norman Pang lawsuit. I think now that many people are much more aware now of Mr. Pang has been making the allegations that the Hawaiian Humane Society conspired to take away his constitutional rights. And I think that although the Hawaiian Humane Society does have the city and county's contract, that the job they've been doing has not been very good for many, many years and needs improvement. I think that the city council in particular, because they do have a contract, a multi-million dollar contract with the city, that they need to be looked at. And I think that an inquiry needs to be made. You mentioned feral cat feeders. They deserve resources, Mr. Dela Cruz. They deserve money. It is not only the Hawaiian Humane Society that deserves to have all of this money. There are people out there who are spending their own money and their own time on a daily basis helping the animals and helping the people and the environment. And I believe that these people need to be recognized, and I believe that the Humane Society needs to be investigated, and we need to just stop taking what they say as gospel and taking it for granted. Thank you very much for the work you do. And that's my comment for today.
Well, thank you, Pam.
Thank you.
As you can see, that I know some of the people spend their time and money out there, and they're having to actually sneak around because there's the rules. If you come in and feed, we'll arrest you, or you get a TRO out on you. So we turn people into criminals that are actually doing something that we all know needs to be done.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's hopefully, you know, as time goes on and you're successful and be in a position to address that.
But no, thank you.
Now, the recycling of waste, solid waste, and the reusable energies, I'm always concerned that people, you know, for example, historically we come up with sustainability. Well, in that, not in the, that order. We had hot spots. Then we had biodiversity. And every 2 years, there's a buzzword. Someone comes along to suck the big money cow, you know. And then we don't hear anything about those. Today, what is it now? What are we dealing with now?
Shipping.
Well, I mean, as far as it's not sustainable. Well, I guess it's sustainable. Oh, no, now we're going green. And then we incorporate these mantras and we do nothing. We're still stuck with the same garbage truck driving around picking up garbage and going over and putting it in a hole. So what do you have in some of your views and visions for addressing some of this and bringing us out of the cave, so to speak? Any ideas?
You know, in regards to a solid waste master plan, I agree with you. You hear a lot of different technologies being mm-hmm. bounced around. But what we really need to do is we need to take up the problem ourselves. I think recycling is such, I mean, that's something we can all do without trying to bring in a new technology right now. I mean, if every single person recycled, we could divert so much municipal solid waste from the landfill.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge paradigm shift for most people. You know, right now the island curbside recycling program is strictly for single family home, and it's not even throughout the entire island.
Mm-hmm.
And as the program progresses, I'm sure we're going to see less and less municipal solid waste diverted to the landfill. So that's something that the voters voted on. Mm-hmm. That's something that is now required by charter because of that vote. And we really need to put more resources there, because I really believe that when the program reaches, you know, when people really buy into the program, when it mm-hmm. reaches that point where the public says, yeah, this we made the right decision, we voted for the right cause, we could probably divert more trash into the landfill just by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still going to have trash.
Right.
And so, you know, we're going to have to then really, as the city already put out these RFPs, and time changes, technology changes, but right mm-hmm. now we have the H-Power plan that does feed into the HECO grid.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to really let the recycling program mature, and we need mm-hmm. to be more aggressive in how we're going to expand it,
mm-hmm.
especially with apartment buildings, commercial buildings. shopping centers, whatever the case may be. We need to get more people buying into the recycling and creating incentives for it, creating some penalties if you don't follow it. You know, right now the city budgeted $15 million for shipping, and that's because...
For shipping out of trash.
For shipping out of trash.
$15 million.
$15 million. If we could use that money to expand the recycling program that's mandated.
Right. So, oh, okay. Look like we touched on a sore spot for you. That I didn't know that. So, $15 million. I know we budgeted for it, but you're saying
that's a tipping fee that we're going to pay the mainland landfill.
It's $15 million annually.
Oh, how long? That's in the budget right now.
For how long of a period? That's the what I was going to ask. Is it 9 months or 6 months or is it a year?
Well, the contract was let in September, but like I said, that's based on a tipping fee. So when trash actually gets to the mainland landfill, mm-hmm. and they'll charge us by the ton, and that's where the $15 million, that'll go to pay for the tipping fees.
Now, you know, in theory, you and I can sit here and talk, and some can be suspicious that we are just... Let me ask you this. Would you have handled this shipping of trash? First of all, would you have done it? And secondly, now that we find out things are not in place, how would you, as a mayor, deal with that? You know, some things that you deal with unknowns, but when they present themselves as problems... What would you do? Take this situation here. Could you elaborate or share with us something?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I have my concerns about shipping, and I think you got to ask yourself, too, do you find it socially responsible, right, that we're going to be shipping out our trash versus really trying to deal with it at a local level?
Mm-hmm.
I do understand that, you know, especially the councilmen of the district, they want to ensure that as... The eventual closure of Waimanalo Gulch, mm-hmm. and maybe shipping is one way we're going to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would prefer that our resources be real focused on something that's mandated by the public, something that we know is socially and morally responsible,
mm-hmm.
which is recycling.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we haven't gone island-wide as far as single-family home. We still need to do apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't even touched on a required recycling program for commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at the last public council meeting, we asked the Department of Health, because right now the vendor still hasn't been able to get shipping up and running.
Right.
And so there was trash piling on the dock.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Department of Health said, you know, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to find a storage location for the trash.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a permit for the storage location.
Right, the P5. They don't have a P5 yet. And so would you tolerate this kind of... At what point would be the breaking point? Or what would breaks the camel back in your administration?
Well, you got to put those type of things into the contract, saying that if you can't break state law,
mm-hmm.
you can't... There has to be... If you can't get it up and running in 90 days or whatever is reasonable, then we gotta cut bait.
You're saying you wouldn't tolerate if they come actually letting this contract out before having those things in place is a grave error right there.
You know, and you could even, you know, the city, if we, you know, it's too late now because the contract was let the way it was,
mm-hmm.
but we could put in some escape clauses for the city,
right.
and saying that, look, if you cannot ship the trash, if you can't leave it on the dock or any storage facility for more than 2 weeks,
right.
at that point, we're not going to provide you any more trash. It's going to, until you can fix these problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have that. There are some strict conditions on how long they can leave it and how long it sits. If it sits longer than 75 days, you have to repackage it, burst it open,
yeah.
repack.
All repackaging it, but they can still leave it there.
Well, it costs them over there, but...
Now they're having to pay for storage.
Pay for storage, but to... See, the one thing, they didn't have the facility set up on the mainland, the dock. Now all of a sudden, they got nowhere to store, so they get a new storage facility, but they don't have permits. So these are the kinds of things where the taxpayer pull their hair out and say, this is where our money's going. $15 million, quite naturally, hadn't been paid out, but we are in a contract. So until they deliver, you know, and when they do start, it's $15 million, the taxpayer.
And the whole point was to divert trash from the landfill,
right,
from our landfill, but now it's just going to somewhere be in storage.
So you would be cognizant of all these things, and I'm thinking, you know, take a spoke in the wheel of a bicycle. It's just one, and they're going to, this whole shipping of trash was to divert trash from that little area, while we got an entire city and county here that hadn't really started to address its own recycling and reuse and the management of waste. So that strikes me as rather, would you?
Yeah, you know, and we have to thank Schnitzer Steel and programs like, you know, companies like that who step up to the plate, who do these community recycling programs. And they're all community and business-based, you know. I mean, my office tries to participate as much as possible, especially when it's in my district. Because you can see people taking responsibility.
Right.
You can see people getting excited about recycling.
Right.
You know, in a nutshell, a lot of community organizations and high schools turn trash into cash because of those recycling projects. You know, it's taking several years to get to the point where people embrace it. They are excited about it. You even see more people using reusable shopping bags. You know, we need media, we need government, and any type of community forum mentioning that, okay, we need to keep doing this. We need
right.
to keep... It needs to be supported at every level. It has, like I said, it has to be a paradigm shift. But, you know, recycling, shipping, the landfill, those are just several components that we have to come up with in regards to our solid waste master plan long term. You know, there's other things we can do in regards to using less energy. LEED standards for buildings. And, you know, that's not necessarily directly with trash, but it's just in energy, as you mentioned. Even with photovoltaics, how do we get the city to process permits a lot faster so that people can get photovoltaics up? I know of the Oceanic Cable Building in my district right now. They are trying for a LEED gold standard, I think. They're trying to get the photovoltaics up on the roof, and they're having some problems at DPP.
Right.
You know, when it comes to alternative energy sources, that's something that we need to be a little bit more aggressive on and saying, this is what we want. We got to not create so many roads. I mean, you want to, like I said, protect the public. You want to ensure public health and safety. But at the same time, we have to get these projects out.
Right. Well, one of the things that, and you still as city council, you might want to look at this, but one of the contributing factors that there's such a delay in some of these things, a great many of the people that would normally have their DPP duties are doing rail work. So we've taken a large percentage of those people, even people that retired, have returned and as special hire to work on the rail. So when someone you know who put in for a photovoltaic panel or what have you, or and they can't get their permits, we need to maybe look at how are we diverting the workforce to the rail. And I think you'd be... surprised and shocked and astounded as to the diversion. And so what's happening, and maybe you might want to look into this, where used to, if let's just say theoretically, as an example, you go in and you want to build a veranda and you want to put a hot tub in it or whatever. Well, used to you get one permit for that. Now they're double-dipping you, you see. You go in and now they charge you for multiple reasons you get a permit for each thing, whereas normally it was one permit for the facility. And so that's a tax that's not being talked about. And so would you be amenable to looking at that as mayor and trying to refine that and fix it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, even in Seattle, I know the mayor of Seattle and the local government increased height restrictions, and they also... They also waived all residential building permit fees, and that was to help stimulate the economy there. You know, those are things that we need to consider. Those are things that we need to look at. You know, every time we hold up a building permit, or every time we take that much longer, then that's someone that's not working. The business has to hold their construction on hold. The construction company is on hold. that's less revenue for the city because those improvements aren't made. You know, it has a whole trickle-down effect by holding up these permits and creating more and more red tape.
Yeah, well, you're going to be working hard now. Still as city council, do you have to step down, or can you share that with me?
Yeah, no, my term ends January 2nd, 2011.
So you're going to be burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah, you know, I'm passionate about the city and the services it provides. You know, and from the moment you wake up, even while you're sleeping, the city is churning. The city is working for you, right? You got to wake up, you use the restroom, flush the toilet, that's the city. You turn on the water to brush your teeth, that's the city.
Right.
You get onto the street to go drive your car, or you take the bus, or you walk on the sidewalk, well, that's the city. You know, the city is your supporting cast in making sure that you have a decent quality of life. When you do notice us is when there's potholes, when there's cracks in the sidewalk, when you can't flush your toilet, when you can't leave your trash out. You know, that's why.
And when the trash piles up, then you really
exactly,
get,
exactly. And so we have to make sure that we do a good job so that you don't notice us, so that your life has, you have a good quality of life where you don't notice that these things need improvement. That's where we got to get to.
Yeah, that's a task. But you know, you're going to be city councilman while you're doing this. What are you got any events coming up? How do people learn more about you? Do you have a website?
Yeah, we have a website, DonovanDelaCruz.com, DonovanDelaCruz, and they can always call us at 622-2000. We have one event coming up on February 22nd at Mandalay Restaurant from 5:30 to 7:30, so they can go online and get details. They can sign up for our newsletter to find out more about our platform and our plan for the city. You know, in these times, we need to make sure that we're going to have a mayor that's very aware of all the different issues, that's familiar with all the different issues, especially planning, public safety. You know, we're going to have to deal with creating jobs, modernizing city services, and really focusing on infrastructure.
What's your stance on crime? And do you see there's a need for improvement? And you as mayor, what would you do once you get in the saddle, if you were to make it there?
You know, I think we need to go back to the 80% requirement of beat officers. You know, when Chief Donahue was at the city, he required that at least 80% minimum of positions needed to be filled at the beat officer level. And I think we need to go back to that. I mean, you know, we depend on the police department. They do a great job for us, and we need to make sure that we provide them as many the resources they need to ensure that they get that 80% minimum beat.
Yeah, having lived in so many states and cities, I think this is probably by far one of the finest law enforcement agencies, you know, that I've seen them in many situations. And, you know, some people call and complain, but I know. What would you do to enhance that? Would you seek more funding? Politicians says, yeah, I can fix this. What would you do with you bring their salaries up to keep them from running to the mainland? You know, those are the type of issues. Would you be looking into that?
Yeah, you know, we want to provide the safest city possible, and you want to make sure that being a police officer is attractive.
Right.
You know, as you mentioned, it's very, we lose people to the federal government. We lose people to other states. Unfortunately, as a city council member, or even just as a mayor, you're going to have to work with three other mayors and the governor to ensure that contract is going to be as attractive as possible for future police officers.
Is there anything, we're coming down to the wire, is there anything you'd like to share with us? And again, it's always an open invitation. You're welcome to come back, because I believe that the public can decide for themselves better when they hear you unscripted and, you know.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, I grew up in Wahiawa. I went to Lelehua High School, and my experience with city services has always been, you know, I guess one where my family depended on it. My grandmother never drove a car. She only caught the city bus. And so I know how important public transportation is for people. That's how she got to work. That's how she got to the doctor. That's how she did shopping. That's how she even paid her bills. Mm-hmm. I mean, she would actually go to pay her bills. And we need to make sure that the government services that people depend on are going to be there. Mm-hmm. And that we're not going to be eroding those services, affecting people's quality of life. And, you know, when I grew up, I learned to swim at a city pool. Mm-hmm. I went to summer fun. City services are very important to the entire island, especially those areas where they don't have the kind of resources that mm-hmm. other areas do. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to make sure that especially, you know, when you talked about crime, that you have parks and those kind of services available so that we keep kids off the streets, you know. Mm-hmm.
And again, your website is
DonovanDelaCruz.com, 622-2000.
And don't call his office, his council office, because they're going to tell you right up front. You need to call. So I made the mistake. They don't do any campaigning there, so
no,
don't call asking any campaign questions, because they'll tell you. So anyway, I saw that you're having some kind of event to kick off on February 22nd.
February 22nd at Mandalay Restaurant, and that's our Chinese New Year's party. It's a fundraiser for the campaign, and so, you know, we want to welcome as many people as possible.
So you're feeling pretty good about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, we're going out every day to farmers markets, community events, you name it. We want to reach out. We want to make sure that we hear from people, and especially what's important to them.
Okay.
What's going to make our city the best possible city. It's, you know, in the middle of the Pacific, there's no reason why we can't be the best city in the world.
All righty. Well, thank you, Donovan. De La Cruz was here with us today talking about, and he's a mayoral candidate. You can go to carolcox.com to listen to this again or share it with your friends at carolcox.com or send us an email. And don't take, he say he's born in Wahiawa, but he did go to Eugene, Oregon to college. So he's been across the water, so don't go away thinking, this is a local boy. He's not worldly, so don't fool yourself. He has some some outside experiences. So, well, thank you, Donovan.
No, thank you.
Anytime,
thank you.
I appreciate you coming by.
No, thank you.
Aloha. Mahalo.
On Sunday morning, Grandma's hand played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hand used to issue out a warning. She'd say, Billy, don't you run so fast. Might fall on a piece of glass. Might be snakes there in that grass. Grandma's hand.
Thanks for listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Power of global knowledge. Go to mywonderfulworld.org to learn more. It's a wonderful world.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.